I'm doing it now. It's now recording.
Okay.
It's recording in the cloud.
Excellent.
So, Dana, do you, what do you want to do with that recording when we get it?
We could share it with people. I don't know.
You just want to, post it where other people can see it?
I think so. I think that all of these sessions, like, people could miss them, you know, since they're at a certain time. And so it'd be helpful for people to go back and be able to listen to them, especially when this one where there's two at the same time.
Okay.
That might be happening after this week. I think we may need to just do all of our events and then we'll make things available. So if you're you're ahead of the game.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just don't want to forget to record. So welcome, everybody. We'll get Anthony on here and then we can start breaking up into groups. So, who was in charge of devotions this morning? I missed it because I was getting ready. But who did devotions this morning?
Don did.
Oh, Don did. Sorry, Don, I missed it.
It was lovely. He did a great job.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
All right. Let's get Anthony as a host here. Right. Welcome everyone who are here already. There's two different sessions that will be happening. So one that's more kind of on the program side, and then talking to a bunch of different camps will be sharing their experiences. And then there will be another one with Evan, who's talking about fundraising. So if you would like to be part of the fundraising group, please send a message to Anthony in the chat and just say,
Dana, a lot of people have already let me know that they're in the program group. So
yeah,
program people only let me know.
Okay, we'll switch that.
Yeah.
Okay, if you want to be part of the program one, message Anthony and he'll get you into the program one once we split up here.
Have I been made the host?
Let's see, Don, did you make him host yet?
I'm working on that right now, Anthony.
Okay. I can't put him into groups and say,
Anthony, I don't see you on here, though, on my list. Oh, I got you. I'll do it now. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So a lot of people are just doing it in the...
Don, did you make me co-host or host?
Co-host. Because Catherine's a co... I mean, Dana's a co-host and Evan's a co-host. So we're all...
Well,
can you do what you need to do? Or do you want me to... Or do you need to be...
I think you need to make me host for now. Good morning, everyone.
Yeah.
make me host for now and then we'll change it after I put people into group.
Yeah. Because I don't have access to the groups either.
All right, Anthony, I'm going to find you and I'm going to make you the host. You ready?
I'm ready.
Makes me very happy. I can breathe a sigh of relief. I don't have the responsibility of being the host. Here you go, Anthony.
All right, there are two Anthonys in this group. It's a lot of people. So you're messaging Anthony Briggs.
Anthony, you're in charge.
Or in the larger group if you need to. And so... again, if you're here to, there's two sessions, there's a program session and then there's one or more on the program side. And then there's one about fundraising with Evan. So let us know if you want to be part of the program one. And then we'll get everybody split up into the two groups. All right. And once Anthony has that, we will do that. So looks like we have quite a few people here. And it's after 10. So welcome. This session is what we learned in 2020. And we'll have a number of different camps talking about some of the program aspects or logistics. And then Evan will be talking about fundraising. And it's good to have you all here. Thanks to everyone who came to the couple sessions we had so far. And we'll just assume that you're going to Evan's session unless you say program.
So up front is the preference.
This is going to take a minute. So
yeah, it's a little bit longer.
Maybe we can do some introductions or something.
Yes. So, Evan, do you want to say something to introduce a little bit about what you'll be talking about? Is that all right?
Sure. Thanks, Dana. Good to be with you all. On the development side, we'll talk a little bit about the trends in giving, both coming out of 2019 and how COVID has impacted those trends, what we've seen in the national landscape across all organizations, including CAMP. And then we'll turn a little bit to a very Lutheran, what does this mean for CAMP, both for your end-of-year development efforts as well as forecasting into next year, some suggestions. And there'll be
time for launches ready.
Letting other folks offer what they've experienced this year, too, and share some of their stories and lessons learned along the way.
Excellent. Thanks, Evan. We have a number of other people that will be helping with the program side. We have David Box from Lutherdale. He's here to answer some questions. Ben Carlson from Camp Shalom. Amanda Randall from Shatek Luther Ministries. Katie Vogel from Metagoshi. I think I haven't seen her yet, but hopefully she's here. Kevin Lean. I don't know. I've never pronounced your last name. I hope I said that right. From Camp of the Cross. And we also have Curtis Bradbury from Luther Hill. So we have a number of different people here to talk about programming or summer camp in 2020. And I know there are a bunch of other camps or other people from those camps who are here as well. And so there's an opportunity for you all to share as well. We tried to get some different people than who talked on the podcast. If you haven't listened to the podcast that is in the LOM podcast about the same subject, then you should do so. We're hoping that this will be a little bit different conversation, same conversation, but different information, and just to hear from some different people. And I will also share right now, let's see here. I have a resource that I would like that everybody can have that I put together, if I can get to it. I might have to do that in a little bit because it's not really working at the moment. But it is a resource of all of the camps that ran program in summer 2020. And then I have links to the COVID-19 page on their website. Let's see. And so if they had that. So it's a great resource because it'll get you directly to, there's different policies that they have posted, some camp communication, different letters, updates, newsletter, that sort of thing. Let's see. I think, Lutherdale has a YouTube video on the different procedures and what they're expecting people to follow. I think it's mostly focused towards retreats at this point, but it's the same sort of thing. Like the procedures, policies, and different resources. So I will get that to everybody. That will be good. And then at the bottom of that page that I'll send you, it also has links to some great resources. So the CDC, if you haven't looked at this, these resources, they're here. I imagine a lot of you have seen them. The CDC, the ACA, and it has a field guide. Also, the Association of Camp Nursing has a good resources there. Of course, the LOM webpage and our COVID-19 information, and there's also a link to the podcast. So there's one for the same subject, but also there's one a podcast about those who ran virtual camps. And there's a Slack group that's been mentioned before too, but there is a Slack group, COVID-19 group that you could join, and a Facebook group about summer camps in COVID-19. So some good resources for you to look at to get some information. Let's see. How are you doing, Anthony? Are we getting there?
We're getting there, but it's between scrolling the different screens and checking.
Sure. Okay. All right. We'll keep going then. So we're going to talk about a number of different things in this session, hoping to provide you a bunch of different information so that we can make good decisions for this next year as well. And we have a number of different sessions coming up. We can talk about that a little bit too. Randy is going to be talking about planning for a crisis situation this afternoon. So that one's coming up if you aren't already signed up for that one. And let's see. Also, the auction is going on right now. Don, do you want to say something a little bit about the auction? Is he still here?
Yeah, I'll just say that the auction is online. The link to the auction, I'm going to put it up here on the chat so that you can all find it if you haven't found it already. And we're encouraging you to let as many people know, all your friends who might want to log into the silent auction will be taking place through the live auction on Saturday evening. But then the Saturday evening one is at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Pacific. And that will be a ton of fun. And we think if you've never done an auction before, make sure you log into that on Saturday evening. It will make your Saturday evening a lot of fun. And it's all just a very important fundraiser for LOM to make sure we have some of the funds we need for moving forward into the next year. And I think you're going to like it. Those of you who have been at an auction live, you know how much fun they are. Dave Jarvis is not the auction chairperson anymore, but I saw Dave on here. Dave, do you want to make any particular comment?
Probably the biggest thing is to talk to your constituency and get them out there on your Facebook page or whatever. Part of the way this was set up was that we'd be able to invite our own constituencies to be a part of this and help support LOM as well. So a lot of the trips, some of the trips from past are out there, but there's some new stuff as well.
There's a lot of different ways to engage. So share on your Facebook pages so more people can hear about it.
So if you all had private messaged me alphabetically, that would have been really great.
Let's see. Randy, do you want to say a little bit about your session coming up this afternoon?
Sure. Planning for a crisis. We've all experienced that, I think, lately, a little bit of what a crisis is all about. And we're going to be looking a little bit at how do we take a crisis and twist it a little bit so that it has a fresher view for us of what a crisis is about. and how we handle them. So it's going to be about taking a different look at crisis more than anything, and a little bit about how planning for that happens.
Thanks, Randy.
Mine will be primarily a PowerPoint, just so everybody knows.
And only one session going on at a time, so it'll be a little bit easier to get started. Thank you for your patience, everybody. We're getting there.
I think that we are there. I got some messages that I could not read and answer. I want to apologize. And some people also let me know that they wanted to do the development one. So I hope I get everyone in the place that they wanted to go. So I'm going to hit open all rooms if we're ready. Dana, is it good?
Yes. Yes. And if you end up in the wrong space, message Anthony Briggs and he'll work on getting you to the right space. So thank you for doing that. And here we go.
Whew. Okay, everyone who is here, did you want to be in the, nope. Well, let's see. Catherine, it says that you are over there. Let me see. So let me, oh, you were interesting.
I got kicked out. It like it ended it, so I had to come back, so.
Do you think that it's closed? Is there a limit to the number?
I don't know. I don't think so. This should be an unlimited, so you should be able to just pop us over there.
And Jenny, you also wanted to move over?
And Anthony, may I get moved over as well, please?
Who is that?
It's Curtis from Luther Hill.
Also, Dana. Could you put me in that one? Oh, Evan, you're not in your session either.
Anthony, this is Lori.
Wait, no. Hey, Lori, send me messages. Dana, you're not on the list. This is bizarro. Lori, do you have some magic?
No, I was supposed to be in development too. Is this the development one?
Yes. Dana's the one that I've got to move because she has a group of people waiting on her. This will be the development group. Is that correct, everyone? Yes. Yes. Dana, what is it? Says Dana Isaacson. You are not listed as unassigned in this group. You
Anthony,
are. Yes.
Can you put John Hemingway over there too? I'm under Claire's.
John,
under
my one account. Second. I got to figure Dana out first. She's the one who's in charge. It has you listed. On the laptop version. And over there. This is very weird. I'm going to try one more thing.
Ah, okay.
That's very bizarre. All right. Now, one at a time.
This is just pissed me off.
You're pissing me off too, whoever
the office.
That.
I started on the.
Now, did you send me messages in the chat to let me know what you needed to move if you're still here? I apologize, everyone. So this is very bizarre. Jenny, you're on neither list. So I'm going to have to move on from Jenny. Sorry. Clara.
Hi. I'm with John Halverson at Metagoshi Ministries, and we're having a little bit of a technical difficulties right now. We would like to be moved to program, if that's okay. We were trying to get set up on a different computer, but it's not working at the moment. So.
Okay, what is your name?
Katie Sunbakken.
Is that how you're listed on Zoom?
It might be listed as, yeah, it'll show as Katie Sunbakken on Zoom.
Katie with a C?
A K.
You're not on the list. It doesn't have you as a participant. This is in alphabetical order. Let's see. Lomo to fundraise, and you're in the right place. Clara, Jenny, you know what? Evan, why don't you start? And if you send me a Zoom chat, I will do my best to find you and to figure out what is going wrong with Zoom, because some of you are just not listed as assigned or unassigned. So hang tight. And good morning, Evan.
Good morning, Anthony. Good to see you. Thanks for your work on this. And thanks, everybody, for navigating these new realities with us. Glad to be with you this morning. I'm going to start us with some conversation just about numbers and trends, share up some slides with you. I invite throughout this conversation your input as you've seen things, as you've experienced things. Please don't be shy about jumping in. Know that in this multi-screen setup, I may not see you raise a hand, so feel free to come off of mute and to chime in or to put something in the chat box for us along the way. I'll also pause at some intentional times, including at the end, for a more open conversation about what you're experiencing and for some questions along the way. So glad to be with you and glad to share. I'm going to throw up a screen. And for those folks who were dreaming about a program session today, don't worry. This will be better than anything you could have experienced in program this morning. So we've got a conversation about us, about what we've learned about fundraising this year. And I know several of you joined us for a conversation early on through LOM for development way back in April, in early May. We had several opportunities to talk about this. Several of you were also on our free conference a few weeks ago in September, where we talked about trends. But I want to back up and just start with the norms, because I think it's important to know the baseline. So here's what we normally see in development. This is 2019. So when we look at development across the United States, the national results are usually released in about late June. We get to see everything that happened in the previous year. There's some reason for that in the way that a lot of charities report through their 990s and through their audits and through the tax submissions that individuals make and corporations make throughout the year. But we usually get to see these around the end of June. And last year, we had another growth year in giving in the United States, up to $449.64 billion. It's about the sixth year in a row that we've seen growth. Now, you may have heard in 2018 there was a decline in giving. That's not really true. It's a slice of the pie that was nuanced because there was a decline in individual giving. But when we look at that decline in individual giving, we see that there was also an increase in giving from donor-advised funds and from giving from charitable distributions from IRAs that almost match exactly what we see as the decline from individuals in that year. We get a flush. I'll say more about that in a few moments. So we see that 69% of all the giving in the United States was made up from individuals. And that's always the case. Individuals always lead the way here. But a reminder that there's some nuance in these other numbers. The first nuance is that bequests are the gifts that come from individuals only when they die. So you've never had a corporation necessarily leave a technical bequest, at least in the way that these are recorded. So these are individuals as well. Now we're up to 79%. When we look at foundations, there's a couple different kinds of foundations, right? There's a private family foundation, and there is also the big corporation foundation or the foundation from the sale of an asset like a hospital. And then we look at corporations themselves, and of course, corporations are made up of different bodies, right? There are the corporations that we think of, the Amazons, the Dells, the Googles, that sort of thing. But then there's also Evan Moylan Consulting, which is a privately held corporation behind GSB fundraising, which you all see as the public side, and from which I do some of my charitable giving out of my marketing dollars for the sake of tax purposes. So when we put all that together, we're croaching in on about 90% of giving in the United States coming from or being directly impacted by individuals. And that's an important thing to remember. Also important to remember where it goes. So all of giving showed increases last year, and religion, giving to religion actually grew in that space too. It grew a little over 2%, but it didn't grow by the leaps and bounds that the others did. And so we actually saw a net decrease in percentage to religious giving from about 31% to about 29%. Education always follows. So these two spikes here in religion and education are always the largest, always, always, always. And human services is always third in there. Behind that, we see a couple interesting things. One, these grant-making foundations grew significantly in 2019, and that's because of the tax law changes and how people are giving in that way, giving through their DAVs, giving through their personal family foundations. And then we also saw some movement here in health and in everything else. This everything else is your arts, right? And your humanities and those theater and pets. All of that is the most volatile section of giving in the United States. When the economy is good, it grows fast. When the economy is bad, it declines fast. When there's interruption to giving, it declines fast. And they also have an interesting financial situation in that they are earned revenue directly from consumer, kind of like camps are, as opposed to, say, human services, which are earned revenue through government contracts, right? So when we look at camps and retreat centers, depending on where you are and what religious body you're in, as Lutherans, typically our camps are somewhere around the 30% mark of total operating budget coming from development. On the other side, when we look at social service agencies, they're usually under 10% of total revenue. Now, of course, that 10% is oftentimes many times larger than what we would raise. But as a percentage of budget, it's a smaller dependency there. Arts and animals have a higher dependency, but they have an earned revenue that's more like camps because we have a direct-to-consumer earned revenue from the people that serve us. So that was the background that we entered 2020 in. And then right in March, right, we have really no development numbers left yet because January, February, historically slow months for development in the United States. Right in March, we come in and we have COVID impacting us. We're watching. We shared with you in the spring this graph of a projection of what might happen in the United States that we would see in the first 2 to 4 weeks, this huge bump in giving, a surge in donors responding to the emergency, kind of like disaster response, making pre-gifts or advancing their gifts in the United States, which is something that we did experience. And in fact, it lasted longer than what we projected there and what everyone thought would happen. So, in phase one, we actually saw this go to about June, July, out into here. Then in the summertime, which is historically where we see giving slow down, we knew that giving would slow down and encourage that the only way to make it not bottom out this year was just to push on your communications. Nationally, that didn't happen as well, and we did see giving slow significantly in the summer. But we saw the surge come back faster than we thought. And so this surge we didn't think would come in until Thanksgiving. Again, as always, 35% of giving happens between Thanksgiving and the end of the year. We thought the surge would match that this year. Presidential election, which I'll talk about in a minute, has an impact on that as well. But that surge actually started coming back earlier in the year, as early as September and into October in that way. And so right now, I would say we're somewhere in this space right here, that somewhere on the second half of this surge, but nowhere near to a new normal. But what did we actually see? Well, we saw that donors did respond early and generously to initial COVID appeals. So those organizations, especially camps and retreat centers, that did that kind of urgent appeal at the initial interruption of income, had a significant response, but not as significant even as the second wave of response that we saw in the fall. Giving did slump in the summer, including for congregations, although congregations are a place, which I'll show you in a second, we saw the largest move in some trends like digital trends. And we saw this second wave rise, particularly with tangible targeted echoed appeals such as Giving Days. And what do I mean by that? Tangible in there's a very direct correlation between my gift and the impact it's going to make, that I'm targeting very specific donors. In other words, I'm not spending money on new acquisition or going out into the field to do that work. I'm echoed. I'm working across all the channels because, as I'll show you in just a second, digital made dramatic impacts this year, but it did not cross the overall boundary that we wanted to before we move entirely there. And appeals such as the Giving Days, where we saw great success from many of our colleagues around the country, from Calumet to Novus Way to Agape Curie Beach to Lutherdale, all and many more that did these Giving Days, saw great response from those from their donors. Often, by the way, with a strategy of participation over a strategy of dollar amount, and I'm going to come back to that in just a second. So there was research done all throughout this pandemic. And we know that 25% of donors at the beginning of the pandemic plan to increase their giving to respond because not everyone has been impacted by COVID, right? COVID is very specific. I mean, we've all been impacted, but financially, COVID has very specifically impacted the lower third of the market. Those people that are in direct service lines of business, those people that are specifically hourly wage to those direct services, it has not had as dramatic effect on the upper middle class in a general sense, obviously making no light of what's happened to individuals across the way. But 25% of donors plan to increase their giving, 54% plan to maintain. And when we ask them, how do you plan to do this work? 58% of those plan to address domestic responses, staying internal to the country, and 11% international and 20% equally. These were all surveys done by organizations prior to the election and prior to being in depth in COVID. These were done in the kind of May, June part when we're transitioning the length of time that we think this was going to happen. But the biggest outcome of all of this for nonprofits is that volunteer engagement has dramatically decreased. We've lost our opportunity to engage with donors through volunteerism. And involvement leads to investment, right? And it's also the touch point. Our congregations, part of the reason why religion stays at that highest peak across giving is because they're the only segment of the donor, of the organizational base that gets to touch the lives of their donors every single week, right? Or every Christmas and Easter. But we get to touch, you know, the lives of our donors on a less frequent basis when they engage with us. And in many ways, we've lost those, right? Those normal places where the case for giving and where the impact and engagement story is told, where we cross paths either on site at our facilities, through the Synod assemblies and things that happen or other things along the way, or through volunteer opportunities to make a difference in that service. So that's been a very specific outcome. This slide is horrible. I apologize. It looked much better on a small screen. Donor advised funds, 70% of people with donor advised funds plan to address COVID-related issues. That's a really critical segment of giving. Donor advised funds, most know by now, but if you don't, it's kind of like a medical spending account. You put money into it at a timing that meets your needs as an individual. And as such, that timing has no bearing on when you give that money away. You get your deductibility in that time when you put the money in, and then you have to give that money away. It can only be used for a charitable purpose. So it's individual driven, but it's usually held by a third party institution, financial institution. Oftentimes the checks say on the bottom, you know, DAV or Evan Moylan Donor Advised Fund. DAF or Evan Moylan Donor Advice Fund. Sometimes you see the DAV too, depending on the institution. 70% of those folks plan to address COVID-related issues because that money was already set aside and they knew they could still make impact with it regardless of their financial situation. By the way, you're going to see a spike in that again this year because of some of the tax laws that I'll come to in just a second. The charitable IRA distribution, sometimes commonly referred to as the charitable IRA rollover, this is still in effect as well this year, and we're still seeing it do very well. The rules changed on it. So the rules, it used to be if you were 70 and a half or older, you had to take a required minimum distribution from your IRA. I won't take you through the numbers of this, but essentially that required minimum distributions taxed as income. It also increases your income base, so it could increase the tax on your other income. So for folks that don't need it, they can give up to $100,000 per person by rolling it directly to a charity. It is not a deductible gift, but it avoids the income and reduces the tax base on the existing dollars. So very, very popular. It stayed in place. It's permanent until Congress changes it, but it's permanent now. And but the rule that changed was the required minimum distribution age raised to 72 and a half, right? Or and so, but the distribution is grandfathered in. So those charitable gifts can still be made before the required minimum distribution has to be made. I'm going to pause for just a second. I see things coming through the chat field that I am not sure if they're addressed to me or to Anthony. So let me just look here. Gotcha. Okay. Please, again, feel free to interrupt if you have comments, questions, or concerns or things to share from your experience in here. Online giving was really interesting over the last year. It actually fell. Online giving fell for 8 weeks beginning in March. So we did not see that ramp up that happened in digital until May 3rd to July 4th. We saw a very, very big period of growth between May 3rd and July 4th. One of the prominent things that happened there was the special Giving Tuesday on May 5th, right, as a national charitable day. That really sparked a lot of movement. I think the other thing that happened was over those 8 weeks, a lot of our charitable dollars, which go to churches, churches figured out how to give online. You know, churches have been historically way, way behind the curve in this. And even those that had online giving, the percentages of online giving were not impressive. We've seen dramatic increases in this over the course of the year. So online dollars went up 29%. Over the last year, the number of donations, so just independent transactions, went up 19%. Overall, it's up 10% year-to-date over year-to-date from last year. But remember that last year, online giving was only 19% of all giving in the United States, only 19%. So even though we're up 10% year-to-date over last year, that doesn't mean we're at 29% as a whole, right? It means we've grown 29%. So we've crossed into the mid-20s. Maybe we'll cross 25% this year in total giving online. And that's the biggest move we've ever seen in the United States. So it's significant, but it's not there yet. And of course, when we break this into age categories, it certainly breaks in different ways, depending on the generations that are there. And that's why the multi-channel communication and multi-channel marketing over the last year is so important and so critical. In that, by the way, higher ed for the first time took a significant hit in online giving. Arts fell as well. Religion rose dramatically. So we see that specifically in those numbers for online giving. A couple other things that impacted us before I get to the what does it mean part. So two parts of the CARES Act that you've probably heard these things, but just so you know, the first is that this year only, due to the CARES Act, donors can deduct up to 100% of their adjusted gross income. Be very careful with this. Some people have misinterpreted this thinking it meant that 100% of their charitable gifts were deductible. That's not what it means. It means they can deduct charitable gifts up to 100% of their adjusted gross income. Typically, this is limited at 60%. So why is that important? Well, it's important because you're going to see high net worth and upper mid net worth donors do things with gifts this year that are different. You're going to see them fill those donor advised funds because they can make it and take advantage of it this year and then spread their giving over the coming years if they're there. You're also going to see donors pay off capital campaign pledges early. You're going to see donors do some of what we call donor stacking, where I make 2 years worth of gifts in 1 year, but don't give you anything next year. And so that can be really important. This first, the place I see this the most is at churches. Happens to churches all the time. A donor will make their whole year for the next year on December 28th. Of this year. And then the congregation feels like they had this great windfall. They report their giving was so far up, and then next year they can't figure out why giving was down, right? So we have to take this as it is and recognize as organizations that when a donor does that, they're really intentionally carrying that over. And so on our books, we want to remember that, and on our in our boards and our donor reporting and all of that, so we don't show shortfalls where there aren't any. The second part of the CARES Act is the $300 above the line deduction. So as much as we get excited about the 100% of AGI being deductible, remember that only 30% of Americans take an itemized approach to their taxes. 70% of Americans take the standard deduction every year. And so what this $300 above the line deduction does is it gives everybody after the standard deduction an additional $300 for charitable giving if they take that action. So that is a place that meets more of the mid-level and the lower-level donors or the entry-level donors to your organization, and is something that can be messaged creatively across the end of this year to remind people both in your organizations and your congregations of what this means. Last thing, just kind of on the landscape here. Historically, giving always slows during and after a federal election. And it usually restores to normal levels somewhere around mid-January. Now, this year, we get the perfect storm of a federal election and the pandemic all going on at one time. And so we don't know exactly what's going to happen. Following the trend lines, which is a dangerous thing to say after we've all followed trend lines for the last 2 weeks through the election period, but following the trend lines, I would anticipate that giving is going to continue to be strong towards the end of this year as people respond to pandemic. But we know that a lot of donors have prepaid. Again, they've made their gifts early in the year and may take a more conservative approach at the end of the year. So just something to keep in mind that we do know that there is, and it's not just federal elections, but the presidential election typically has a larger impact on development across the country. So, what is this? How does this apply? I'm going to stop my share for just a second. How does this apply to what you all have been seeing in your context? Does this follow what you're seeing? Did you see a spike at the beginning? Have you seen a spike in the fall as you've come through this?
I think for the most part, we've been seeing the same trends on the pathway side.
I'm sorry, Chris, what camp were you at there?
I'm at Pathways,
okay.
West Minnesota.
I think for the most part, we've been seeing those same trends.
Thanks. There is some regionality to this, and that's why I'm asking a little bit.
We did as well. I'm Amanda at Fortune Lake in Upper Michigan. We did a targeted mailing August, which we don't normally do because it was our 90th anniversary and we were anticipating people probably wanted to hear from us after the cancellation of summer camp. And that did bring in a lot more dollars than we expected, and curious to see then what that does to the end of the year giving. But yes, it followed the trends, that you mentioned almost exactly.
This is Lori from LRCC. We're in California, two camps, and we have seen a tremendous rise in giving. I think in part the COVID, people do respond to disaster. And then we had a big fire that affected our one camp, and people then doubled up in response to that and have been very generous, as have our churches.
Well, thank you all. It's good to hear that, that you're seeing that generous response. And I want to pause and just say there is hope out there, right? So just a couple stories. For those that were on the conference we put on in September, you heard a story from Sarah and Jen at Refugee One in Chicago. Refugee One is a small refugee resettlement agency, one of the affiliates to organizations like LIRS nationally. They're localized. They're doing the work of resettling families. A year ago, they learned that they had 1 year to get out of their building. They had been leasing for about 30 years. It had been sold, and they have to have a property in downtown Chicago. That's tough. It's expensive. It's there. And they had never done a capital campaign before. Wonderful development director in Sarah, who's built, and Jen, who built a development program over the last couple of years. But they've never done anything like a capital campaign before. They set their initial goal at $1.5 million. And the second to last thing I did before COVID was go to the kickoff event for their capital campaign. So quite literally that night at the capital campaign, we were walking around like, do we shake hands? Do we not shake hands? You know, we weren't at masks yet. Nobody knew what to do. It was awkward, but it was too late to cancel it, kind of thing. And they have already exceeded their goal, and we've increased the goal to $2 million to go on there. So they and we will probably end up raising about 2.3 to 2.5, which is good because it reduces planned debt that they already had in the campaign. So, you know, there is great hope out there. We launched the capital campaign with Nokomi Camp and Conference Center in Tennessee. Executive director in place, and his wife is the operations director. Never done a capital campaign before. They've launched a $3.1 million capital campaign, started in the middle of this summer. Feasibility and all of that had been done in advance. They chose as a board to go ahead and continue, kind of extend their silent phase. They're just about to cross their first $1 million. So it's happening. If the purpose is there, if the impact is there, there is still giving happening in this space. Of course, there's always a hardship. You know, I think Andrea Schofield went to the program side of this, but, you know, Andrea launched her capital campaign a year ago. The day after they launched their campaign, the main dining hall burned down, right? So then they were paused and doing an emergency appeal. Then they got the capital campaign, stood up again, got into the capital campaign, then COVID hit and camp was canceled, right? So there are interruptions there, but their folks have continued to be generous as well. And so we see that. And that leads me to this kind of next part of, so what does this all mean for us, you know, and what do we do with this? And let me share screen back up with you again. I think it comes down to this. And if I said nothing else today, going into next year, it would be this: have a purpose, be missional, and be innovative in your service. We're about to be done with people being willing to give to crisis. In times before COVID, we would say the ship can only sink one time, right? So the ship can sink, your donors will come out, they'll make sure that the ship doesn't sink. But if they're doing the bailing of your ship every year, eventually they're going to find a new ship. Because donors give for these reasons. Number one, because they're asked. Number two, they believe in a cause. Number three, they want to make a specific impact. Well, if you're sinking, you're not making any impact and you're not helping the cause. And so we've got to move away from that. Number four, they're embarrassed to turn someone down. You know, this is why we use person-to-person asks with major donors and why we leverage the power of community. Number five is where we see humanity break into this, right? Power, prestige, influence, not so much in our Lutheran camps. I don't know that there are gifts of power into the Lutheran camps, but certainly when we see arts institutions, certainly when we see political giving, that sort of thing. And taxes falls to number six for middle-income families. It actually falls to number 11 for high-net-worth families. Taxes are a tool, not a driver. And so that's important to be there. So it just isn't going to be enough, in my opinion, to do business as usual next year. If you're waiting to just come back and be the program you were, I don't think your donors are going to come with you on that. This year has propelled us at a speed we were not ready for, although many have responded wonderfully, and I'm so excited to see what so many of you are doing and so proud of what you're doing from an outside perspective as someone who loves camp. But we've got to be there. We've got to be innovative. We've got to be leading the way, because all of the organizations in the system are sensing that. So there's an opportunity here, right? The congregations are sensing it. The judicatories and the synods are sensing it. The national church is sensing it. And to be at the front and say, we've got a way forward, will be compelling. And you see that in some of those things. And innovative in service, right? The funding models, we know that, you know, at 30%, to use the round number across, you know, Lutheran camping, 30-35%, we know that that's not enough. Your donors cannot fund 70% of your ministries. It just won't happen. And so, you know, they could for a year, but they can't forever. It's not a sustainable funding source. So we've got to think about those revenue sources and revenue generation in new ways and what that service delivery is like, as well as development, because they go together, right? That impact goes with development. So we're about through that period where people are doing the emergent response, and we're going to be back to a period where people want to see themselves making a difference in their giving, and we've got to think about that. The second piece, you got to communicate more than ever. Right now, there is... turn your Lutheran, shyness off, your Lutheran piety off. Stop worrying about over-communicating to people, because for the next 60 days, you can't over-communicate. The risk of annoying one person who got sick of your emails is so much less than the risk of missing 30-40% of your donors at the end of this year. There is so much communication going on that we have to look at multi-channel echoes. So again, if you're just depending on email, it's not going to work. If you're just depending on direct mail, it's not going to work. If you're just depending on social media, it's not going to work. If you're just depending on personal visits, it's not going to work. You have to have a strategy that encompasses all of those over the next 60 days in order to get through the noise of what's going on in the world right now and really going into next year. I would say plan everything by appeal rather than by, let me back up. You know what I mean by appeal? So we used to think, okay, we have our fall appeal, we have our spring appeal, and we have our renewal appeal in the spring, and we have our open camp appeal, and we have our fall appeal, and we have our end of year appeal. And, you know, those are our direct mail appeals. Well, now an appeal is a period of time. And it's going to go across everything that happens in that period of time with a clear and consistent message and multiple opportunities to give. Right now on my desk are three organizations that I love more than anything, that I know that I'll give to, that I promise to give to every year, and that lead our way for Heather and I in our charitable giving. But I haven't made my gift yet. Why? Not because I'm not going to give to them, but because it just takes multiple communications, especially in churches. Churches give up way too easy on this. It takes multiple communications to get people to move to action. And so over the next 60 days, think of your end of year appeal as a comprehensive appeal. It's going to involve direct mail. It's going to involve Giving Tuesday. It's going to involve your e-solicitations. It's going to involve your personal visits. And all of that messaging is clear and concise and together, and that is your end of year appeal. Same will be true when you come to renew donors next year. Build an appeal that goes across all the channels and carries one consistent message. When we pop between things, that's when I don't know what to do, right? I got a direct mail appeal from you that says, it's the end of the year, anything you can do. I get Giving Tuesday that says it's for the waterfront. I get, your e-appeal at the end of the year. And we're giving people opportunities that seem like they're competitive with one another. Build an opportunity that goes through all of those. Second thing, focus on participation this year. So most of us, if you have had the experience where you've seen a bump in giving, typically at the end of the year, we're focused on a couple things. We're focused on upgrading existing donors. and we're focused on recapturing any donors that have fallen off right before the end of the year. And sometimes we do a little bit of work on trying to ensure that we get acquisition through this space. This year, we want to focus on participation and, you know, getting all the people in the room again. It's more important to have donors engaged than it is to get them to give on level this year. And that's an important change in the strategy, because if we lose them, then they move to reacquisition and that's harder, right? Keep them engaged. We've got to change the narrative to forward thinking. So now's the time to aim for the future if you haven't already, and to move away from the impact of COVID as the driver to the we found a way forward there, and have a specific impact. Unitize this. In other words, you know, let me know that $25 does X, $50 does X, $500 does X in that space. Personalize. This is not a dear friend letter year. This is dear Evan and Heather. Dear Evan and Heather, thank you for your gift so far this year of $700. We hope that, you know, as the year comes on, blah, 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 you are letting me know that you know me and that we have a deep enough relationship where you're counting on me. Dear friend of, you know, St. Bede's in the Weeds, won't you please prayerfully consider a gift? Just says I'm one of the masses. So show me that you know me, and show me that you know how to say thanks in that way. I'd suggest a couple things in segmentation as you look at your end of year appeals. And when I say this in segmentation, I'm talking across all channels where you have the ability to segment. Of course, your existing donors, anybody that has given this year, most of them, again, have given above level already. Thanks, thanks, thanks. And a softer ask of anything additional you can give here at the end of the year. You know, with that, all of these kind of have that COVID language. We know that COVID has impacted everybody, but some more than others. And if you're able, please prayerfully consider, right? Live on Cybunts, those donors that either gave last year or in some year but haven't given yet this year, I would be take a more aggressive approach. Normally, we would try to, not a more aggressive approach. I take more of a reacquisition approach. Normally, I would still talk to them like, thank you for your gifts in 2018 of X dollars, and won't you renew at that same level this year? But there's probably a reason why they haven't given if they've made it all the way through your annual fund year this year. So I would use a unitized specific lower ask to just get them reacquired as a donor. In other words, would you consider a gift of $50 this year to do X, you know, or to do Y, so that you get them back in the fold? Still, obviously, in your other materials, you're going to, like the remittance device, you're going to have higher giving levels on there, but in the ask itself, it would be there. You may have a segment where you're trying to move to automated monthly givers. This is a great strategy for anybody who's given specifically lower levels. So say anybody who's giving you between $50 and $150, moving them to $15 a month moves them to $180 donor. So you may more than triple a donor. You may, you know, increase a donor by 30%, but moving those people. So you may have a segment where you invite that kind of giving to that space. You also may segment those folks that give to you from donor advised funds, and you may visit them personally this year rather than or have a real personal attempt to them along the way. I would remind of all the other giving vehicles in the PS this year on anything that you do and in your emails and other things. So in other words, can I give through the, you know, the charitable IRA rollover? Can I give through the donor advised fund? Can I make a gift of an appreciated security? All those things. I would remind folks of those things. And I would communicate earlier and more often this year, for sure. Couple last things as recommendations. As you move into next year, you got to renew your donors earlier. I know that seems counterintuitive because we have this end of the year push, but the lapse in the movement into the new, if we leave that space too open, it's going to be really hard to renew donors next year. So I would plan your renewals in February, you know, late February, maybe to move your renewals if you're not doing them that early already. Again, changing the narrative to the future. And then I would look for two specific things. One, improve your tools if you haven't already. I mean, so many of us have had to do this, but this is going to be our reality, and online giving is going to continue to grow. So get your CRM strengthened if you don't have that, so you can relate to your donors. Get your online giving strengthened through all the tools that are available out there, like givelively.org or other tools, you know, that are inexpensive ways to get into this. Get your email capacity to segment and to personalize better. Get your ability to deliver program and communication via video strengthened. And then find new ways to get personal touch points. What's going to replace assemblies for you? What's going to replace on camp? What's going to replace volunteerism and events and that sort of thing? And this, I'll just be completely transparent. This is really profoundly impactful to me right now, because this is normally the time of year where I get to sit with you all, and I get to sit with the Presbyterians, and I get to sit with the Methodists, and we get to talk about mission, right? And those new opportunities and new projects come up in our work as well. We've got to find new ways to engage those things along the way. So let me pause there again and see what you all are thinking and what you're experiencing this year.
Hi, Evan.
Yeah.
Hi. I've thanks so much. This was really amazing, and I haven't been in any of your workshops before, so I got so much out of it. I'm representing Koinonia Camp, which is located in New York State. Mm-hmm. We're in an interesting position where the camp was already shut down before COVID because of mold and some financial difficulties, and we're working on getting it moving together. I think we're working with your organization. We'll be moving someone into or from the fundraising organization. We're at a point where we're sort of started a capital campaign to raise money for the buildings, and that's moving along. We still need to raise money for that, but we have had no staff. We have no money for paid staff. So I was thinking about doing an appeal for this holiday with a targeted goal to try to start earning, you know, getting enough donations to maybe pay staff for a year or 6 months or something until we can start to open the camp and get some revenue. So I just wanted your thoughts on that. If there's a conflict, though, of course, with those, you know, donors who want to, you know, put money into the camp and then maybe operations. I just was curious about how you might navigate that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And Kathleen, I'd be glad to have a deeper conversation offline too, specifically to see if I can give some advice. So I'll make sure I put my email address in the chat function in just a second. You're welcome to follow up. We can have a more detailed conversation. But that capital campaign and your annual fund, they always work hand in hand. And so I would absolutely do an end of year appeal to your donors for the annual fund. And look at the strategies you're using on your capital appeals for those things, because the size of the opportunity always matches the size of the gift. Donors will only give an annual fund sized gift to an annual fund sized opportunity. And the mega gifts that come to capital campaigns only come when the opportunity for impact's that big. So I would always, always do that. You are probably in a special situation where the segmentation might be a little bit different, where you look at, how you drive the messaging of what's coming forward. And while I know a little bit about Koinonia and the story, I probably don't have enough to pontificate on that more deeply than that. But I would absolutely do an end of year appeal in that to your donors to try to keep them in there. To that, there was also a question about on the chat privately to me just about, you know, should you eliminate club levels, giving clubs, right, which we've all established over time. The data on that shows that they're still working nationally. This might be a year to thank donors as a whole in that space, but I don't think I would move away from them all the way. I think I might be more generous in the way that I respond and thank donors this year, in the way that I list folks, and the way that I talk about giving to build that spirit of thanks, but I don't think I would move fully away yet from those giving clubs, in part because I think the unitization of them gives you the moves management that you want long term with your donors.
Evan, what other questions?
Yeah, go ahead, Adam.
I'm sorry. A question about the existing donors in the segmentation. You said, you know, to give a say thank you and then make a soft ask. So are you saying that I completely agree with that, but then I'm wondering if I'm doing an end of the year appeal, a direct mail, am I not including a response card and an envelope in that soft ask, or am I like including those things as I normally would in a direct mail appeal and just saying in the letter, thanks for your support. If you have, you know, we'd love for you to consider.
Yeah. So definitely include a remittance device, a return envelope, definitely, and definitely include an ask. I, this is not the time to walk away from donors or to be shy about asking. It's just if your organization has been in that place where so many donors have overperformed this year, they will actually probably still make a gift this year. I think you can just soften that relationship with them in the softer ask, where instead of a unitized, directed dollar amount ask, which all the science shows us normally works better, you can use that softer ask. Not for those who haven't given this year. I would segment those people out, but definitely, definitely still have that remittance device in there. And even if you're doing, you know, if you're doing any paper communication outside of development, so if you're doing a paper newsletter still a couple times a year or end of year report or anything like that, I would include a remittance envelope in those things too until it stops paying for itself.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions, comments, or things from your setting?
Evan, Tom Bly from Camp Shalom. I was going to type you something to ask a question. One of the things we ran into as COVID hit is we were going to begin a capital campaign to replace some cabins and construct another building. And when we went to the major grant organizations in our area, they've almost exclusively switched their focus to social justice, food security, and housing, things related to that, the virus. What are you seeing in terms of trends on that? If that's something that's going to become, maintain itself as a problem for us when we're trying to build, how, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Absolutely. Most of the funding partners at the, so there's kind of two kinds of granting agencies that we work with, right, as Lutheran Camps. One is the Christ Lutheran Church Foundation, right, or this foundation or that. And then the others are the bigger ones that fund capital campaigns, that fund new program innovation, that fund, you know, capstone gifts, those kinds of things, capacity building grants. Specifically on those, we are seeing nationally that there is a prioritization, and probably arguably rightfully so, to the immediate human needs that are there and the impact that's there. So whether that's intervention with hunger or homelessness or other human social service needs, as you've said, many of them have made that. That is a national trend. I'm not seeing anything that leads me to believe that's been permanent, and that it will be permanent. I think those will come back to a normal funding cycle. We are also seeing, you know, beyond COVID, we're seeing grantors be more intentional about their impact and what they're doing. And beyond that, we're still having a little bit of a success. So like the Murdoch Foundation, which, you know, predominantly funds up in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, those kinds of things. I'm seeing gifts from them to faith-based camps for capacity building and those kinds of things. So there are still significant gifts out there if the relationship is built and those pieces are there. I think you're going to have a harder time building those new relationships for a couple reasons. One, as you noted, they're priorities. But two, a lot of the times to get those relationships with funding partners, you've got to show up at their conference. You've got to show up and talk to their grant program officer or whatever at a local event and begin to develop a relationship. And those things are getting harder and harder to do right now. And we're more dependent on letters of interest and response to that kind of stuff. So I think it's going to be harder right now, but I think it's going to be temporary. I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep about it being permanent, but if you're in that capital space, you probably want to look at your timelines and maybe extend those a little bit to that. And if anybody is looking for that kind of research, I do maintain a subscription to the National Online Database of Funding Partners. It's a paid subscription that you have to have where we can do research on all of those. So I can help you find those if you need to do that in your content. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Hey, Evan. I just wanted to give a quick thank you. Back at the start of this, bunch of us were in a Zoom meeting with you, and you were saying at the start of COVID to reach out to donors, but not to ask for information, but just to check on them and see how they were doing. And we did that over a few months and got massive amounts of positive response, both in just, you know, their kids calling us up and say, hey, my mom was so happy that the camp called and just asked how she was doing. And then we also got quite a few donations out of that. So that was a really good idea. And thank you for that.
Oh, thanks, Keith. I appreciate it. I'm glad to know that you guys did that. What a great way to connect with donors.
Evan, you mentioned earlier as our end of the year appeal to talk about we found a way forward out of it. And are you saying to really avoid so many people are in deep COVID issues, you know, where they're $200,000-$300,000 in the hole. Is that not where you would suggest people going this year?
No. Or? If you're, I appreciate that clarification. If you're really in crisis, if the ship's still sinking, you still got to tell that story. You can't paint over and not be honest with your donors. But if you're in that midsection where it's been tough, but there's light at the end of the tunnel and now you're moving to the next phase, that's where you turn that messaging in that space, I think. But if you're truly in crisis or if you're still in an appeal, like, for instance, I see my friend and colleague Mitzi Schaefer from Novus Way in here. I know they have a massive appeal underway to help undergird annual operations. I know Randy has had one that's been successful in North Carolina, too. You know, you're still under your appeal. If you've got something underway, I wouldn't move away from that necessarily in this time. And I don't know if either of you want to add to what you're experiencing in that space.
Yeah, I would say now is the time to start turning towards the light, though. People in the world want hope. And if you can see any glimpse of hope in your organization, that's what they want to hold on to, and they know the impact you can have, and sharing that light and that hope is future impact, and we're going to make up for lost time in changing the world by developing leaders and forming faith. That's the message that they want to hear.
I would agree. We have had a successful early campaign, you know, end of July through October, and it's starting to slow. And I think the slowing has to do with the crisis is a little bit over, and now it's time to look towards the future. What's next? What's coming? What's your plan afterwards? How are you going to help move us to some positive point? So that's where we're headed now, too.
You know, one other thing I've seen on that, and it's hard to know right now, I've seen varying degrees of reactivity to what a new future may be. So organizations that were planning the big, massive lodge, right, for large group adult housing are moving more to pod-type structures where you can have multiple small groups, you know, on site at one time, living more in family units or whatever. I've seen others say, no, we're still on this. We're going to time it differently. You know, I think you have to look really specifically at income drivers and revenue and what revenue is going to be possible for you. Seeing a lot more investment in outdoor space for this, you know, things like pavilions and that sort of meeting space that is available for outdoor recreation. And I haven't really seen that full. I know the program conversation is going on the other side of the proverbial wall, but, you know, I haven't really seen the magic elixir that's a one size fits all for that change yet in program delivery model. I've seen a lot of great creativity that's working contextually in certain spots so far. But that's our proverbial vaccine, right? Like, we've got to find a way to deliver the meaning in the program in a way that can transition through this time. And our donors are waiting for us to figure that out too. You've got a lot of special situations in this space. So, you know, for instance, I'm looking at Brad up at Sky Ranch, and, you know, so thrilled last night, Brad, to share that you guys got access back to the camp, give thanks for the safety of all involved in the firefighters and all that in your program. But you're going to have an opportunity to tell that story and what it means. That's going to be contextual in your space for fundraising, for how people give back in there and what it means for your organization long term. I know the folks in California have been through that. I know, you know, both North and South have been through that in history, and others have been through it in floods and other things. So, any other questions, comments? If not, I think we've gone over our time a little bit. I apologize for that, but appreciate you all sticking in there through the hour.
And Evan, thank you so much for all of that. And I want to apologize to everyone for our technical glitches. Zoom is still not letting me move some people, so we're going to do some investigating before our next session later today to figure out what's going on with that. Don, you were trying to talk, but you're muted.
I'm sorry. Here we go. I wanted to just say on behalf of all of LOM, Evan, thank you so much. You have been with us this whole way, and you have been so good and gracious about sharing from your expertise. And we're grateful to GSB. GSB is even though we canceled the conference, GSB is one of our three major sponsors for all of this that we're doing and all that we'll be doing through 2021, moving up to the 2021 conference. So grateful for all of that. And to Anthony and Keith and your colleagues on the LTE committee, thank you so much for putting these things together. What a great contribution for the life of all of LOM. We're very grateful.
Good. Well, pleasure to be with you all. Thanks for the opportunity. I look forward to joining you for other parts of the day today. I'm going to come into Randy's session on planning to continue my growth and learning too. And I've got contact info in there in the chat box if anybody wants to reach out and have a conversation about what you're experiencing directly.
And several people have reached out wanting to know how they could access the recording of this or the other session. And we will be sharing that information. So look out for your emails and we'll let you all know how you can access those.
Yeah, we'll be putting that on the website, so keep your eyes on that. It might take a day or two to get it up there, but we'll get it there.
So do we move back into a main room, Anthony or Don, or we're done, right?
Yeah, we're done. Feel free to sign out. They're just still wrapping things up, and hope to see you all again soon. Take care.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Hey, Anthony, you want to leave this meeting going for the committee?
Well, I just sent you a text, and Chad, there are a couple things that I think would be helpful if we could touch base with you guys with us, if you can stay for a couple minutes,
sure.
Just some communication things. And boy, that was a learning curve. We don't have any more of those, do we? Split groups that we have to do that, or I don't think so. Which is really great.
Yeah. Mine is all PowerPoint, so no splitting groups.
Well, groups, I mean, but we couldn't have even pre-assigned groups. It still would have had to have been done manually once we got in here. But
I think it's usually given the size of the group. I think you did a really good job. It was a little awkward and a little slower than maybe we would have liked. But, you know, I think 99% of the people are understanding of that and realize what the challenges were. So I don't think we have to feel bad about that.
It was weird because, and I don't know if any of you have more experience with working with Zoom, but so there were people that it would not let me move them. It wouldn't let me assign them to a group, or they weren't even listed in the, in either category. You can see everyone who's assigned and unassigned as you're putting people in groups. And I don't know if it's a difference between the level of Zoom that I have and the one that LOM has, that maybe there's different functionality that we are able to access. Well, I don't know, but it was, but again, we're not having any more that we need to worry about splitting that many people that quickly.
Well, I know when they did it with Cal Lutheran, with all of their, they put everything online. It was a very similar thing where it took a while to figure out where everybody was, and they had to go in manually and put all that in. And if they sign in and they change their name, sometimes it doesn't always let you know. So if somebody signs in through their account but puts a different name on the screen, you don't know that.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble following you, Anthony, as you bounce around my screen.
Chad, you do quite a bit of stuff with Zoom, with the worship thing for your church and stuff. Do you have anything to, any insights for us here?
I haven't done too much with breakout stuff. I was involved in one that they did have to break us out into certain specific groups, and it was difficult there too. The only thing that they did that maybe might help us is they had us put our we broke out by synod group, but they had us put our synod in our name so that she could go down and do that, like she could see. So maybe if people added to their name program or fundraising, then Anthony would just have to look, and he wouldn't have to go back and forth, but you, when you look on the list, you'd see what the person wanted. But
that's what somebody privately messaged to me, is that you just put a one or a two next to your name to do that.
Yeah, that would have helped. Yeah.
Well, if everyone,
now we know.
We had also asked that to just put in the chat box only if you wanted to go to the program. And a lot of people didn't do that. They went ahead and told me what they wanted to do. And I would say 20 people asked me questions that I had no time to answer or deal with while I was doing that. So how did it go in the other group?
In the program one?
Yeah, in your group.
I think so. Well, I don't know. What do you guys think, you that were part of it? Was it informative? Was it helpful?
I thought it was great.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I thought there were a lot of great questions. A lot of people already starting to share resources. I do think our conversation from the other day about trying to figure out a Slack channel or something is going to be even more important, because there were lots of people saying, I have this resource I'm happy to share. I have this resource I'm happy to share. So just finding ways to connect people, I think, is going to be really important.
Yeah, I don't think Facebook is going to cut it. It doesn't seem like it. Did my resource go through? I don't know if it went through. Did you get that document? Oh, well, I shared it. Shoot. It didn't upload, I guess.
Dana,
I
can, how did you share it?
Through the chat. There was like a file, and I shared it through that.
I was late coming in, so
it was later on.
Okay, I didn't see it then.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, maybe I'll just email it to everybody who signed up through, because Chad, I think you have everybody's email in that. So I'll just forward that on then. I mean, that's part, just one thing, but yeah, working on a Slack group.
So I do think the group went really well.
Oh, good.
Yep.
So I do think that having somebody to work, you know, Anthony, you were talking about this on the technological side, you know, so that whoever's leading the session has somebody's checking the chats and all that kind of stuff to help them out. I think that's important as we move forward.
Well, none of our other sessions will have two breakout rooms, which I think that was just, that was, yeah.
I think what Brad's saying, though, is even if somebody's just checking the chat so mm-hmm. that the person leading it doesn't have to worry about that, and if you have some way of getting the attention of the person who's leading it to let them know that, hey, there's a question on the chat that you might address or something along those lines.
So that maybe, Randy, in your session, if somebody is watching your chat line so you can concentrate.
I already have that set up. I have Kyle and Krista both coming with their computers, and they're going to sit here with me, and they're watching the chat and then going to pass information to me.
I might need to remind people, too, Randy, because you aren't watching the chat, that people need to not send you a message. Because Kyle and Krista won't be able to see that.
Especially if you're in a private one, yeah.
Yeah, you know, even just to let them know, hey, if you have questions, put it in the chat. I have staff checking this, so don't send me private messages or whatever.
Right.
One of the things that I felt was helpful when I was looking around, and I did it based on, because I saw, it was helpful after I saw Brad and a couple of the others, having their name and then their camp after their name when they rename that, just so that you can place a face and you know, some of you guys know everybody already, but for the rest of us that don't, just in being able to say, oh, they're in New Jersey or wherever, that was I think is helpful to me. I don't know if it makes any sense to anybody else, but
I actually asked before, while we were waiting for Dana, I asked people to do that, and then a bunch of people put it in the chat, and I'm like, that's not helpful. I don't know who you are.
Right.
So, but not everybody knows how to rename. So
maybe we just need to tell them, go up in the upper right screen.
Maybe.
But yeah. Keith, you identified one of the reasons that these things are really, really good and really important. I have a list of 14 names of people I hadn't met before. I hadn't met before that I want to reach out to. I mean, there's so many good things about what you guys are doing with us that it's just, it's great. So thank you.
Hey, we're still recording this, so when we forget.
Okay, I just renamed myself and it worked.
There you go.
Wow.
Look at that. I need to put Wisconsin on mine.
So as far as sharing resources, and maybe we don't need to solve this problem right now, but we probably do need to figure out the best way to do that, because dumping that all on Chad to put on the website also isn't fair. I know you mentioned Slack. It wasn't a part of that conversation. I'm not excited to add one more thing that I need to check. So I think we just need to figure out the best way to do that. And I don't know if we can set up a folder. Go ahead, Chad.
I'll chime in. If you send me documents, putting on the website is not, that's not that time consuming. And what I was thinking while we were, while I was in the session is, it kind of makes sense to me if we would just add them to the calendar thing that's already there with all of the events that we have. Like, you know, there's an LTE page, that has by day and session and what it is. And then if we just add them underneath and tell people that's where they are, I think that might be the easiest.
For the recordings?
Recordings, documents, you know, anything that pertains to that session.
It could get a little obnoxious. Because I think there were a lot of people in that program session that had a lot of resources to share. Mm-hmm.
My concern would be, Chad, and anybody really would be, I mean, we're talking, there were probably 15 different people with 15 different documents on a bunch of different subjects. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, even if we put them all there, they're going to get lost eventually. And finding an easy way, if somebody, you know, a month from now is like, oh, I really want to go back and look at the menu, the grab and go menu that Luther Dale was willing to share, for them to go back and find that, I think is going to be a little challenging if we have, you know, umpteen resources from every session, and getting all those people to send all those resources in because they won't be able to upload it themselves.
I also think that, like, this is something that people are looking for outside of COVID in this, like, LTE, you know what I mean? Like, there was that comment that people are looking for this. And I also think that, like, doing something like Slack is the future. I mean, honestly, I don't really know much about it, but I also think that's the way that like a lot of the program younger people would work. You know what I mean? I think that.
Yeah. I'm with you. Having another thing. I don't want another thing to check either, but I also.
I would actually prefer if you'd mail them to me so that I can put them in my binder and put it on my desk. Is that okay?
I mean, me too, but.
Could we, I know with past LTEs, we've done the whole Google Drive thing. Can we just make a 2020 LTE Google Drive folder? Because that can be shared with anyone. Alum school, nice bread.
The only thing with Google Drive things is like we keep making ones for like our territory and they keep getting deleted. And then we make a new one each time there's like another conference, and that's not really helpful either. I don't know. That's my opinion, but.
Well, but if we attach it to, like if we attached it, I mean, we haven't deleted LTE stuff from the last.
No, but people can somehow delete them. I don't really know how that works, but it sounds
like. Not if they only have the ability to view it.
Yeah.
Then if you can only view it, can you save it and print it or whatever? You still can do
you
that.
You can't edit it.
But I also think that like I said, this is like a bigger question than just this one LTE. That's the only, yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
But okay. I don't want to have to learn Slack either.
Well, Slack was really, when we did the that first session with the new people, I mean, there was my whole group, that's what they talked about.
Right.
And maybe...
But these resources aren't just for people under the age of 30. I mean, we have to remember that too, that this has got to be a resource that everyone can access. I think the recording could go on the website easily. Chad, you know, like you said, just put that on the website. No worries there. But I think documents and stuff, it needs to be user-friendly for everybody and not just those who are smarter than this group of people.
Gretchen, I agree with you and I feel the same way. However, when Catherine showed me Slack, it's super easy. It's not even learning a new thing, really. It's just doing what we already do. It's basically like an email kind of thing. I feel like a lot of our camps could benefit from being exposed. I think older people, especially things that are easier, because that's the technology that their constituency is going to be using and their staff will be using. And I don't know. I'm getting a little cold sweat thinking about having to learn something else. I mean, this aged me probably 3 years just doing this Zoom thing today. I can't imagine, but I think we should at least look at it before we decide that we don't want to do it.
And as we've said, it may not necessarily have to be an LTE committee person that's, you know, taking the charge on this. I mean, I can't volunteer other people, obviously. But to me, this is a living, breathing thing, much bigger than just LTE. And my fear is if it's just uploading documents somewhere, it's stagnant.
Yeah.
I suppose you do have to have some sort of administrator, but I think that like once you create it, it kind of goes, right? Like there isn't necessary, I guess I don't 100% know, but there doesn't necessarily have to be one person. Like anybody can edit or like add things. So
like Wikipedia?
Yeah, something like that.
Just start our own Wikipedia page.
I don't know anything about it. Could you cut me some slack on that?
Oh! Whoop, whoop.
I bet there is an LOM program person that would probably love that to teach us all how to use Slack and help us get it going.
I know Luther Crest, they all use it as a staff. That's how they do their inner staff communications. And they have for a while. So I'm Jenna or Dave or Maddie or somebody from Luther Crest could probably, and Dave speaks old people language. He could help us.
Yep, and Jody feels the way I do about it. She was like, really, one more thing?
Yeah.
I mean, so, if we've been living without it so far, like, you don't have to join it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something we have, so it's just an addition.
So I want to go back to all these resources that you're talking about from the program side. Are we going to list those then on the website? I mean, is that where it's going to end up? Because it seems like there's a resource tab already on there.
I don't think that's the best place for it, in my opinion. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I think what it is, it's not really necessarily LOM resources. These are individual camp documents that they've come up with that they're willing to share with other people who are interested in seeing things like, here are the day camp protocols we've already established for next summer.
That's what that resource page is supposed to be, though.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It seems, though, that Slack is a pretty powerful platform for doing the kind of thing that we're looking for. And the resource page has not really done the trick for us. And there's not many people that find that resource page. And I think we should take a look at Slack and see how it would be able to work to our advantage in all the ways we're talking about. And I would be in support of taking a look at that. And we certainly could make sure it's on our website that resources are being shared on the Slack platform and all that kind of thing.
I agree. And I think once we look at it, we should decide what's wrong with being redundant and also posting everything on Facebook.
Did you sit in on Evan's session or something?
I was just going to say, we have to reach people as many ways as we can and how they're comfortable being reached. And
so we're still going to send me the paperwork for my binder too.
I have a whole binder I'll send you.
I'm sorry, Chad. Our postage budget is not big enough for that.
I have to let you know, I came back into the office today for the first time, and sitting next to my desk is a box that is labeled ELCA LOM Education Committee Materials. And it's an entire box. I'm pretty sure it came from Rod. So I have no idea what is in this box, but it could be really fun if anybody wants it.
Will you? Jenny, go through it and put it on Slack.
Yeah, scan every page.
That's from Rod Boryak? Whoa.
Rod Pierce.
Oh, Rod Pierce. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm getting my Rods mixed up.
I think we need that document for the future.
I'm amazed he had that much information about LOM. He was never in the leadership role, the chair or anything.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if it is all LOM Education Committee or if there are other things mixed in. Yeah.
I still have the graduation speech that was printed out. I think John Scogan did it from the ALOM school back in the 90s. It's on my wall.
Nice.
Wow.
And if you ever want to see some of the fun pictures of Gretchen.
What are you saying?
One of the pastors walked in my office and saw the ALOM picture up there. That was Joe Pankos. And that's when he had his huge long ponytail.
That is a respectable Chautauqua?
Pastor. What?
Was that at Chautauqua?
There was one at Chautauqua. There's one in Wisconsin up here at Andorra County.
Anything else? How many of us are coming early for the 4 o'clock session? And Randy, do you need anything from any of us?
I don't really know what I'm doing, so help.
You need practice. Anybody who can sign in by 1:45, let's do that, because then we can make sure Randy has host and he can practice sharing his screen.
It's just a struggle. Like this morning, we couldn't with the devotions being on the same one. But I guess
Is that an issue at other sessions for us?
Is it in the morning? This is the only day that devotions are in the morning? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I did it that way, Dana, is because I thought that there might be a lot of people, or not a lot of people, there might be some people who would want to log on to devotions without having to register.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And just so you know, my plan is I'm hoping I'm ready to go so that 4:01 I start my thing.
That'd be great. Whether
people are there or not, that doesn't really matter to me. They can join in.
And I think we need to do that moving forward whenever we don't. I mean, this was an exception because we had to do the groups. Mm-hmm. But I think we just need to, we need to start on time and end on time. And they're being recorded. If you missed it, you know, they'll be available next week.
Mine will likely end early. So
people have all kinds of questions for you, Randy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just glad you have a plan, Randy.
I know. Yeah. 36 slides worth.
Can I get a description of Slack by going to slack.com? Is that,
probably.
Or just laying down on your couch and let it come to you.
All right. Well, you have nothing else to do today. Research Slack.
Hey, thank you. Thank you one and all. These things are going to be great for LOM to have this week. And the first one today, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Don?
Yep.
Since you were going to call me after this, do you want to just stay on here?
Yeah.
So I'm leaving, and I'm the host.
Oh, make me the host again.
Yeah, but I've already left that screen. I don't have that option. Hold on. Let me see if I can go back. I can. There we go.
You should be able to go up.
I got it. I just have to get there. All right, Don, you're the host.
All right.
See ya. Bye, guys.
You know, I better shut off the recording.